Well, hello and welcome to episode 71 of the Payers and Players podcast. My name's Robert. I'm here with Scott. Scott, how you doing?
I'm good. And we're back.
We're back. I know we've had a little bit of a break, but now Scott and I are rebooting the podcast, looking to get some awesome guests on here, looking also on ways to make this sustainable. We've seen some of the stuff that Twitter's done and helping creators monetize what they do. So we're going to try to get some really good guests, look at some ways to also bring the best guests we can to you as we attempt to monetize the podcast. You know, we've never done a deal where we really talk about our own children's journey. Today's episode doesn't have a guest. The guest today is both Scott and I. And what we're going to do is we're going to update you on both our boys' path and talk a little bit about the future of the podcast. So this will be a quick episode. We're hoping about 30 minutes, but I'm going to pass it to Scott. Scott, why don't you tell us just a little bit about what we're doing with the podcast, and then from there, tell us about what Luke's doing.
Sure. Yeah, so as Robert mentioned, you know, we're trying to come up with new ways to bring content to our audience, which is, you know, tennis parents, tennis coaches, and tennis players. And, you know, I think what has been going on at Twitter right now, it's opening a lot of new avenues to bring content to you guys. And so Twitter has been one of the primary tools that we've used for getting our message out and sharing our word. And I think that some of the new things and that Robert's familiar with will really help, you know, bring more value to you guys. And so we're looking forward to some of those things. And the best way to do that is to get the podcast back up and running. And, you know, it's been maybe 18 months to 2 years since we've had an episode. And I sort of missed talking some tennis with Robert and our guests. So looking forward to getting back into the swing of that.
Yeah. Before we go to Luke, just to give everybody an update, you know, Twitter's really changed what the landscape for monetization for creators. They've given creators the opportunity to add a subscribe button to their Twitter account, and then only those who subscribe can hear some of the content that those creators produce. So what we're hoping to do is we're hoping to produce a ton, the majority of free content, but we'd also like to have a certain percentage. We don't know what it is yet, 20 to 30% of really nice episodes that maybe we provide for subscribers. So as we move through that process, we'll let you know through our Twitter account, through our podcast, hoping that anybody who wants to can subscribe. And I think that's what, Scott, is there anything else you want to say there before we move on? That's kind of what you were talking about.
And it just helps us sort of cover our costs. You know, we have to, you know, spend money on, you know, the tools to create the podcast, the subscriptions to, you know, SoundCloud, et cetera. And it just helps us, you know, recover some of our costs. And if you guys find value in our podcast, we'd appreciate you guys subscribing when that time comes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Luke, Scott, tell us a little bit about Luke. Luke's 15, well, just turned 15, right?
No, he's still 14. So okay. on the tail end of the 14. So as I sort of think of the tennis journey, it's about a 12-year process, and we're about two-thirds of the way through it. So the first third would be from like 6 to 10, that beginning time. And then 11 to 14 is that next phase where you're competing in tournaments and sort of seeing how good you are. And then now you're getting close to the finishing school. And, you know, so it's one of those things where you never thought you'd see the light at the end of the tunnel, but getting into the last third, you're starting to see the end is coming. But, you know, he's still in regular school, so it's a struggle to, you know, get enough quality training time that he needs. You know, going to tournaments is always a hassle given, you know, our logistics and that being in Louisville, Kentucky, where, you know, we got to travel quite a ways for some of these higher level tournaments, level 4, level 5 tournaments. When we go to those, they're never that close to Louisville. In the southern section, especially. So it always requires, you know, taking a Friday off and usually that Monday as well. So, you know, that's a struggle. But, you know, the main thing is that with going to regular school and the hours that he has, 8 to 3, it's hard to get the training, conditioning, recovery, sleep, school, everything in. And it's really taken a toll on, you know, sort of his body this year. I've noticed it quite a bit. He sleeps whenever he can because he just doesn't get enough sleep. So, you know, it's something that has really forced him to make a decision that he wants to go online next year so he can be more committed to his passion, to what he's wants to do in college and wants to play college tennis. And, you know, it's one of those things where you go to these tournaments, you go to a level 1, 2, or 3, and probably 90% of the kids are homeschooled or online school. And it's really tough, you know, unless you're one of those, you know, rare exceptions to be able to, you know, get the training in that you need, and still be competitive and keep up with everybody. And, you know, it's just one of those things. You know, he's grown a lot in the last year and he's had some good results and he's been playing well, but then, you know, he'll have some injuries and won't be able to play a tournament for like 6 weeks. And, you know, you start to, you know, oh God, we got to, you know, catch back up to where we were. And so, you know, I think, and you know, that, you know, the decision to do online school will give him, you know, more quality of life in terms of, you know, not being up till midnight, not getting up at 5 in the morning, those kind of things where he can have a normal day, you know, still, you know, have friends, you know, have a good time with his, you know, their friends that he's training with, on weekends when he goes to tournaments, see his friends. So, you know, his social life won't be, you know, really impacted. You know, his right now is the primary, his best friends are the kids that he goes and sees on the tournaments, not necessarily the kids he goes to schools with. So, you know, from a social standpoint, I don't think he'll miss, not being in class, but he'll relish more those times when he's able to, you know, do some more traveling, going, you know, training somewhere for a week, you know, going to tournaments on weekends and those kind of things. So, you know, that's where we are right now. And we're trying to finish up, you know, this year. We've got the high school season that's, you know, halfway through, and, you know, hoping that, you know, he'll make, obviously he'll make the state tournament and just see how that goes. So.
A freshman in high school, right?
Yeah.
So tell me, is there anything as you know, we did this podcast for a long time, and a lot of the reason we did it was just to learn. You know, we didn't know what we didn't know, and it was a good way for us to learn it really quickly.
Yeah.
What is something that you learned that now you look back and you go, man, I wish I'd have done this when he was 8 or 10 or 12.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the things that I got a lot of consistent advice on is regarding, you know, what year to classify him. You know, he's got an April birthday, so he's one of the youngest kids in his class. And, you know, some of the parents that I've talked to, some parents that have reached out to us, you know, one of the things that they've said is, you know, if you've got a kid that's in the, you know, last quarter of the school year where he's one of the youngest, you know, on the boys side, especially, not so much on the girls. I think, you know, the girls, they develop earlier and they reach their, you know, physical maturity a lot earlier than boys. And so the classification doesn't really matter that much for the girls, but for the boys, you know, every year that you go from 14, 15, 16, 17, there are massive changes in a 14 and a 15 year old and a 15 and a 16 year old, et cetera. And, you know, so that's one of the things I probably regret not doing is not reclassing him earlier and giving him an opportunity. Cause he's, you know, to be honest, he's not, you know, one of these kids that's, you know, winning every gold ball that's out there. And so he's, you know, he's competing with a lot of kids and he's, you know, he's just in the last year, he's grown about 10 inches. So he's had a good growth spurt in the last year where before he was one of the smaller kids. Now he's, you know, more appropriately heighted. And so it would have helped, you know, in terms of that stuff. So, you know, I think that's something I would have thought more about and, you know, we'll see how that goes and how he plans to, you know, progress from high school to college and what year that would be. But, you know, there's some NCAA rules that, you know, prohibit, you know, make it harder on Americans and foreigners to start a year later. So, need to look into, you know, exactly what those rules are and how that will impact us.
Yeah. If anybody knows out there, I'm curious about that too. You know, there's my understanding, and I could be wrong, is that once you start your ninth grade year, if you reclass or sit out a year, you can't play D1. And this could all be incorrect, what I'm about to say, but my understanding I had was there were guys in Europe and South America going and playing pro, and they'd be 28, kind of fizzle out. So then they would go play D1 tennis at 28 years old. And yeah, so the NCAA said, hey, look, if you sit out a year after your ninth grade year, then, or once you get into your ninth grade year, you can't play D1. Do you know if that's the, because that's the exact same thing, you know, they've tried to get us with Everett to reclass him, but I don't know how the, I don't know what the rules are there.
Yeah, I don't know exactly either. And, you know, that's something that we probably should have someone on to talk about and, you know, really get to, you know, answer those tough questions. Yeah, I know that, you know, foreigners, you know, it's fairly typical to have like a 19, 20 year old freshman from you know, somewhere outside the U.S., whereas you can't have that if you are inside the U.S. So kind of strange that the foreigners would get the advantage over, you know, the Americans in the American collegiate system. But
yeah, we need to get somebody on here that knows what they're talking about to kind of explain it to us, tell us the rules for sure. Yeah. But what else? So the reclass thing, and I think a lot of people, there's a kid that is from Jackson, Mississippi. He's the number one baseball recruit in the country. Oh. And he held back and then reclassed back into his normal age mm-hmm. division because, you know, he ended up doing exactly what you said. He was small and then he grew and now he's about 6'5". And I mean, he's going to get drafted in the first round of the Major League Baseball draft.
Yeah.
So he reclassed forward instead of backwards.
Yeah. Yeah.
But outside of that, what's something else that maybe you would have done different? Or alternate to that question, what's something that you were a little bit worried that you did, and then it ended up being exactly the right thing to do?
Well, I think it's hard to say because we're not through the process. We're in the middle of it. And it's hard to know if something that you thought was working will ultimately not work. You know, one of the riskier things that we did with his tennis is, you know, he's a left-hander, but he has a one-handed backhand, which is, you know, you go to 100 tournaments, you might see one other kid that's the same thing. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty rare. And, you know, it's, you know, when you think about it, a right-hander's cross court forehand is going to be to a left-hander's backhand. And if that backhand is a one-hander and the kid's small, he's going to struggle a lot, which he did. But you know, as he's gotten bigger, it's becoming more stable. You know, it's not something that's, he can be picked on as much. You know, it's still, you know, for anybody that's out there listening that wants the game plan, hit to his backhand.
yeah.
That's the same thing. That's the same thing they said about Federer, you know, when he was a junior, that his backhand was weak and that they picked on it. And, you know, by him having to deal with it, it made it into a good shot. I'm not going to say it's going to become a weapon where he's ever going to want to run around a forehand to hit a backhand, but you know, it's only going to make him better. The more he hits it, the more he has to hit it, the better and stronger it's going to get. And, you know, like I say, with the bigger he's getting, the stronger he's getting, you know, it's not as easier to overpower him on that side as it used to be.
Yeah. So, I think as I met you, that was one of the things that you definitely toiled over early on.
Yeah.
You know, he definitely looked more natural with a one-hander, but you always struggled because in 10 and under tennis, they just play to his backhand, 12 and under tennis, 14 and under.
Yeah. Right.
And it's one of those hard things to see through, you know?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, he started with a two-hander. He broke his wrist and we had a tournament here in local and he wanted to play it. And so the only way he could play it was to play it with one hand. And, you know, he actually, you know, did okay with it. And so just sort of stuck with it. And then you just make a decision about, are you going to go back or are you going to, and he just never really went back. So, you know, we just stuck with it. So that's, you know, is one of those things where you make a decision. You don't see anyone else really doing it that much. You point to this Chapovalovs and the Alex Rybakovs and stuff like that. There aren't that many on the pro tour or, you know, but you see some in college. But you know, it was a risky choice. And, you know, who knows, it may be his downfall ultimately. I don't know. But, you know, that's something that, you know, still the jury's out on it for sure.
Well, it's funny when you said hit to his backhand is the game plan. The USTA put out an April Fool's tweet. I don't know if you saw it. And it said ATP was going to allow ChatGPT or artificial intelligence to coach the players at changeovers and tell them what to do based on the stats.
That's a good idea.
The image on screen said, ChatGPT says, hit it to his backhand.
Yeah.
It was showing like Nadal to hit it to somebody's backhand. Like, that's always the game plan to start, right?
Right.
So it just made me think of that tweet.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. What else?
Oh, no. And just, I guess maybe just going to the backhands. You know, I think what I've noticed is, you know, the best players have a backhand that is not a liability, you know, so it won't break down. They're not going to hit winner, but they're just going to make backhands. They're going to make them over and over. And that's, you know, what is very effective at, you know, 12s and 14s is I would say you're probably only as good as your backhand. You know, if you have a backhand that can't hit, you know, keep it in the court, then you're probably going to have a struggle in those years. But the better your backhand is, and that's why so many kids, you say, oh, hit to the backhand. Well, that's fine. They'll just keep hitting backhands back, but they'll make errors on their forehands because that's where they're trying to go for their shot. They're, right, you know, trying to be a little bit more offensive on the, you know, that's that sword and the shield, you know, so the shield is going to block and it's going to, you know, protect you. And then that sword is either going to, you know, you live by the sword and die by the sword. So kids will be a little more aggressive on their forehands and they'll go for more and they'll make more mistakes. So, you know, what sort of sounds like, you know, tried and true advice, you know, hit to the backhand doesn't really work against the best kids. It's actually, you know, attack their forehands because that's where you're going to get their errors.
Yeah, makes sense. Was there anything else in his journey? What's upcoming in Luke?
Well, like I said, you know, he's going to age out of 14s here pretty soon. And so we've got to, you know, sort of, you know, he's been playing 16 and unders. And, you know, like I say, he's actually done, I would say he's done better in the 16s than he's done in the 14s. It's a different style of play, you know, more aggressive, bigger players that you can get some free points. Whereas in the 14s and 12s, it's pretty much who's the more steady player will, you know, usually have the better day. But in the 16s, you know, what I've found so far is that, you know, kids are, you know, they're growing. So they've got different bodies. They're trying to be, you know, hit bigger, serve bigger. And you get more errors, you get more free points. And, you know, it's sort of suits his style a lot better than the 12s and the 14s did, for sure.
Yeah, I would say too, watching Everett go through to the 16s now, the match, there's no more of these 3-hour matches, right?
Right.
I mean, every match is like an hour, hour and a half. They never go very long because what you said. I mean, the players are playing more aggressive. They're hitting bigger. Points are shorter. And so you don't see these. You might see a 2-hour match that's like, you know, 7-6, 6-7, and then whatever in the third tiebreaker.
Right.
Yeah, I've enjoyed it because just the matches haven't been as grueling on the body as what you saw in the 12s and the 14s, which sounds crazy because it's a much more aggressive game.
Yeah.
But the points are just way shorter.
Right.
And then every once in a while you get an ace here and there and somebody hits a good serve and they get a short ball and the point's gone once you hit the short ball. Like you said, it's a totally different game.
Yeah. So tell us about Everett. What's he doing? I know that you guys were in in Mississippi, and how was that training and what are you guys doing now?
Yeah, we made a big shift this year. You know, he went pre-K to eighth grade in regular school, and the summer after eighth grade, you know, he'd been asking for a long time to go to an academy. And I kind of held him off, trying to keep him in regular school. He's playing soccer, the whole thing. And one of his primary coaches, David, who you met, moved back to Spain. And it just got harder and harder as he got better and better to find anybody to even train with. And so that this past summer, about a year ago almost, and you for a while, you had introduced him to the Tucker Tennis Academy there in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And you had taken Everett and with Luke, and Everett had gone and stayed with a host family. And so, you know, one of the things I liked about them, he had visited like IMG and he had visited some other places. But one of the things I like about Tulsa and the Tucker Academy is everybody calls Tulsa the biggest little city. Like, it feels like a little town. It's got 1 million people in the metro area when you include, you know, Shawnee and Bixby and Broken Arrow, all the places around it. And so it was kind of a place that I felt like he fit in well. It was very similar to Mississippi. And so he was going there with you. He had been there with me. He had been there, you know, by himself. And so this summer he asked, you know, like, Dad, I want to go full time. Well, at the same time, we'd been working with the school starting in March. And I guarantee you there's tennis parents on here that when I tell this, they're going to be like, yep, same thing happened to me. But I had been working with the school trying to get them. It's a block in high school where 4 periods in the day, an hour and a half each period. And I asked him, you know, can he just have first period as a study hall? And on days it was raining or whatever, he'd go to study hall. On days it wasn't, he'd train tennis or whatever. And they wouldn't give him a study hall first block. And then he'd be there second, third, and fourth block. But they just wouldn't do it. We met with the counselor, met with the principal, met with the superintendent. They just wouldn't do it. And so probably late July, just, you know, we had tried. We enrolled him in Laurel Springs. And then in August, he got a host family up there in Tulsa. And he's been up there the majority of the time and training. And man, I see a huge difference in him. I mean, it just, the every day, 5 days a week, consistent training along with weights and stretching and injury prevention and nutrition, they really handle it all. And it truly is that experience where, as a parent, you don't have to be involved at all. And so you drop them off, you pick them up, and you don't have to do anything in between, right? And to your point, you know, their schedules, like, drop them off 6:30. They train till 9:30. They do school from 9:30 to, say, 12:30. Then they go and they train again 12:30 or 1 to 3. And then you pick them up 3:30, and they're done with tennis. They're done with school. And you got the rest of the afternoon to do whatever you want to do. He had been begging to do it. I finally let him do it. And to be honest with you, I kind of wish I'd let him do it earlier.
Do you think that was the perfect time to do it? Like you said, maybe earlier, maybe a year earlier. But like I say, you know, you see some of these kids that do, you know, they pull out of school, third, fourth grade, and they do this stuff and they burn out a lot earlier. Maybe sometimes they do, sometimes they don't.
It's a good question.
It sounded like you got all you could have gotten out of him while he was there. So, you know, like you said, you worked with David, you did what you could while he was young and while he was developing. But there comes a certain point where if you're in a small town in Mississippi, there's just nothing more that you can do.
Yeah. And I think that's where we were. You know, we were driving 30 minutes each way, driving 45 minutes each way to take him to hit and do things. And it got too difficult. And so that if I were to answer your question, I would say if you think you can get him the technique that they need, the girl or boy, the technique they need at home, and wait, I probably would wait. Because you also do want to balance the whole burnout thing, right? I mean, it is a grind there. The kids that you see that are at the, like when I go to pick him up, when I go in the door, when I interact with the kids that hang in there this late, 15, 16, 17, are just the ones eat up with it. Like, they're just not going to burn out. And they'll go to college and they'll be just every bit as eat up with it. And then they'll go after. These are the kids that'll be 30 getting a USTA 5-0 league or 4-5 or whatever,
right,
you know.
Right.
So they just, when no one's around, they're hitting off the wall. When there are kids around, they're playing, you know, sidewalk tennis like you see at a tournament. It's just tennis all the time and they just can't get enough of it. So I think every kid's different. You know, it depends on how much they like it. It depends on how well you can teach them the technique, or if you have anybody around you who can. If you don't know anybody and you can't teach them the technique, then I'd say go earlier. If you do know somebody who can or you can do it, then I'd say go, you know, eighth, ninth grade, because you do want to balance how much they get. But I also would say go to a few different academies and shop them around, check them out, see, go in, meet the coaches, meet the other kids. You know, see, is this the type of environment you want? Because here's the main notice that you and I had, or at least I did. You can confirm if you did. There are no gurus, and there is no magic potion, right?
Rick Mason will tell you differently, but go ahead.
Well, and there, you know, IMG has coaches just like Tucker Tennis Academy, just like anywhere else you go. You can go to the Rafa Nadal Academy. It's going to be the same thing.
Yep.
Right. So what I would say is you need to find a place that fits your family, the family's culture, the kid, all of those things. One of the things I like about Tucker is I was talking to Matthias, the head pro there, and he was saying that at one point, you know, they had thought about building dorms in the back for kids to stay at, because they get a lot of kids that come in. Mm-hmm. Like Everett was telling me, they got two kids there right now. They're there for the whole month. And then one girl that's there from China, she's there for like a month, right? And so when kids come in, they got to have a way for them to get there, to get them at the airport, to feed them, to sleep, to the whole thing. And he was like, he didn't want to build dorms because he wanted the kids to still be around families. Mm-hmm. And so I think one of the magic potions of Tucker is they have a lady named Tiffany there who's awesome too. And if you call and you say, hey, look, I want my kid to go for a week, they'll find a host family. They'll find a way to board them that's affordable and manageable, where the parent doesn't have to go. But if you want to go, you can. I mean, you've done it. You've gone and stayed with the coach with Luke.
Yeah.
So I just think every family has to find, but some academies board and parents are happy with that. I just think every parent has to figure out what's best for their child. I can tell you though, from my perspective, I've watched him improve a lot. I've watched his attitude get better. The effort was always there, but attitude was always iffy.
Yeah.
I've watched his technique improve. I watched his results improve. And for me, you know, it's been great just to see him succeed and be able to do what he wants to do. And then he volunteers at the academy with the younger kids. And, you know, for us, it's worked. You know, now for me, selfishly, I wanted to see him graduate from the town that we were in. I wanted to see him play soccer there. I wanted all those things. But when I couldn't get the school to work with me, at that point, I didn't feel like I had a choice, you know?
I think that's right. And I think that, you know, you talk about, you know, if families are considering this, they got to explore, you know, different options and everything. And the one thing is, it seems like the mindset is that, well, if you're going to a tennis academy, it has to be in Florida, maybe South Carolina, or maybe California. But, you know, like say, I've been so impressed with what they're doing in Tulsa, Oklahoma. It just makes me think. Yeah, and like you say, and so maybe Everett wasn't, you know, going to be a good fit in Florida or California, but Tulsa fits his personality. You know, it's not the most glamorous city. It's not. It's Tulsa, Oklahoma. But
it's pretty awesome though. A lot of people call it Austin, Texas North. You know, like a little version of Austin, Texas. But to your point, I agree. It's not. You're not going to Pasadena, California.
Right. Yeah. You're going to Tulsa, Oklahoma for a reason. And, you know, what they've built there is pretty remarkable that, you know, when I look and see the Easter Bowl, which they, you know, just happened, and there was like 10 kids from Tucker that went to the Easter Bowl. I mean, how many other academies sent that many kids there? I don't know.
And you know, the 16s Easter Bowl winner male, Ian Bratt goes to Tucker. Right.
Yeah. So, and he's not an aberration. I mean, before him, it was Nico Hang. Before him, it was, you know, Pierce Rollins. Before him, it was Zeke Clark. And, you know, it's like they've got, you know, and on the girls' side, they've had, you know, several players that have been All Americans in college. And, you know, it's like I say, they just produce good players. But like you said, you know, there's no magic potion. It's not brain surgery. What these top academies are doing, or ones that are developing great players. The formula is you get there early, you do drills, you know, you work on specific things, whether it's consistency, patterns, you know, returns, serve, et cetera. And, you know, then you do your, you know, your strength and conditioning, your fitness and agility, and you put matches in the afternoon.
And That's it.
Well, and it's the discipline to do that.
Yeah. And let me add to it. So, you know, I think that good pros matter. I do. I think I think you go to places where there's good pros and there's always going to be good players. I think affordability matters too. I think hard work matters too. So what I think Tucker has found a way to do is give you all those. And you know, I think I see some of these guru coaches on Twitter and Facebook and all over. There's no magic to it. You're hitting volleys, you're hitting forehand, backhand, you're hitting serve. And you got to have somebody who can teach how to do those, right?
Right.
But there, it's not like it's some kind of super secret, you know?
Right.
I mean,
right.
And you look at the Serena and Venus. I mean, they're with their dad till they're 12 or whatever the age they were. And then they find some good pros. But by then, a lot of their strokes were already ingrained.
Right.
And they were still good. And they found a way to be successful.
Right.
So, you know, you walk in, Tucker, you walk in the front door, and on the left is a glass window deal. And there's gold, silver, and bronze balls galore. I mean, and in the 18s, you saw Declan and Kale won the doubles in the 18s at Easter Ball. So, they one of the seniors, now they've got four seniors, and all four of them have signed to play college tennis. One of them's a girl, and she signed with Georgia. So, a lot of people think they have to go and spend a ton of money and go to the places that do the best job advertising. And one of the things you helped me to see was that there are places out there doing it that are really good at what they do. And they don't really talk about what they do. They just do the hard work and have the success. And what's funny is, as I've talked to the parents of the other kids there, I'll say, how did you find Tucker? And they're like, well, we were at the tournaments and every tournament was a Tucker kid winning it.
Yeah.
95% of the parents I talked to that have their kid there, they moved their kid there because their kid was getting beat by a Tucker kid.
Right. Yeah. The same thing is, you know, that's how I heard about it. You know, Luke played Winter Nationals a couple of years ago and lost to a kid that was from the Southern section that had moved to Tulsa. And we're like, well, really? So you moved from, you know, Alabama to Oklahoma. And that's how I heard about it. And then, you know, you just do a little bit of research on it and you see the success they have there. And it's like, that makes a lot of sense. And then you think, you know, if they can do it in Tulsa, why can't it be done anywhere?
Everywhere. No. That's right. It takes is a facility, kids, and coaches.
Yeah.
You got that?
Yeah.
You can do it anywhere. It's just hard to assemble that, make that a full, where it's profitable. You know, a lot of these academies just can't find a way to make a profit. So they found a way to balance it all. And you and I have talked about having them on the podcast to talk about it. And this isn't an ad for them.
But right.
This is the point is you can tell as a parent, I think I think I've found the right place for my child.
Yeah.
And I think that's what every parent just has to find a way to do. Find the place for your child that's the right place for their development. And you know, for years, I tried to keep them in regular school, not do the homeschool thing, not do the online school thing, not do the academy thing. But at some point, and I remember in July just looking at him and saying, look, you're about to be in ninth grade. You know, at that time he was 14. It's time for you to start making decisions that affect your life and me not be making them. And this was what he wanted to do. And I'll be honest with you, I've never seen him happier.
That's awesome. So, but it raises something that I just happened to see right before I jumped on this call. Our buddy J.Y. O'Bone, who we had on the podcast a while ago, he has his latest blog post is the homeschool hack. And so, you know, he's addressing the question of, you know, hey, you know, all the kids that my son is our daughter is competing with are doing homeschool. I want to stay in regular school. How do I keep up? And his solution in his blog post was that you sort of have to treat every weekend as a training block, you know, where if you're not going to a tournament, you're training, you know, 3 or 4 hours as if you were doing, you know, what these academy kids or these homeschool kids do on a daily basis. And it's too much. I mean, you know, if you're asking a kid to, you know, go to school, you know, during the week, you know, do clinics after school, you know, conditioning whenever they can, homework. And then you say on the weekend, oh, well, now you got to, you know, train for, you know, 4 or 5 hours and do all this stuff. It's too much. You know,
I see what you're saying. I think the point of his article should be it just depends.
Right.
I mean, let's be honest. This is such an individualized sport. What works for one might not work for another.
Oh,
and so you as a parent and a kid and a player just have to figure out what works for you. Kyrgios doesn't have a coach.
Right.
He's still a multimillionaire and wins tournaments.
Right.
Other people do have a coach and that works for them. I think case, it just depends what works for you. And then also the region of the country you're in. I mean, in Atlanta, there are schools that they only go to school Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, no Monday, Friday, and they get out at noon every day.
Yep.
And these schools are private, and they've kind of found a way to balance, kids that are highly competitive, maybe gymnasts or golfers, yeah, or whatever their goal is, how to make some sort of in-person work with that. And you and I know some folks that actually have kids in those schools.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't have a school around me that was willing to do that.
And in Georgia, it's not just private schools. There's some public schools that have flex schedules too. And you see, a lot of states, some states, not Kentucky for sure, but they have Florida Virtual, the Connections, yep, Academy, which are public schools, but they're online. So, you don't have to pay, a private school tuition to do online. But I was curious, is Everett still doing Laurel Springs, or have you found any other options that look good as well?
Yeah, we went ahead and bought a house in Oklahoma, and so we're going to be up there next year. So Oklahoma has like 9 different free online schools. You can do Connections, you can do Epic. They've also got like Oklahoma City Public Schools has their own virtual school. There's a bunch of them. You can go online and just Google like free schools in Oklahoma and that are virtual, and there's a bunch. And that's what's also interesting is the legislation in each state sort of affects your options. In Mississippi, there is no virtual option. Like you said, in Kentucky, there's not. I mean, there are some that if you did it out of state, there's no free virtual option in Mississippi. So we enrolled him in Epic for next year just to save the money,
Okay.
Why? And I think it's going to be just as good looking at the curriculum. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because
What are some other options? I know that you're an educator, so I value your opinion on this. But what are some other options other than, say, ICL or Laurel Springs, if your state doesn't have, a virtual school option?
Yeah, you and I have talked about this a good bit, and I really had been researching this. When we jumped in July, it was a last-minute decision. So I just went with what I knew would work, and Laurel Springs has been doing it for a long time. But because of the pandemic, there's been a lot of virtual schools pop up as a result. And so you look at like Missouri Online, Missouri's University Online, Indiana University has an online that's basically a quarter of the price of Laurel Springs. I think Laurel Springs does a fantastic job, but I think they also have lived in a time when there was no competition or very little, and now there's a lot of competition. Uh-huh. So I think if you're a parent, you just got to kind of, explore. But if Oklahoma didn't have any free options, I probably would be doing the Indiana University Online. Anybody from in or out of state can enroll, and super affordable, but very high quality. But yeah, again, each parent has to also just go research and ask other parents. And if Laurel Springs were cheaper, we'd stay with it because it was fantastic. Got nothing negative to say.
Right. And Laurel Springs is what, about 9,000, 10,000 a year?
Yeah, right in that range.
And Indiana University is about 2,500.
Yeah, and it depends on how many classes. Laurel Springs does it where you pay the tuition and you can take as many classes as you want. Right. Indiana charges you per semester per class. So if you're going to take 5 classes per semester at $250 a piece, that's $1,250 a semester, so $2,500 a year.
Yeah.
But if you want to take 6 classes, it'd be a little more, right?
Right, right. Plus books and other fees that I think are – you don't have those same kind of things with Laurel Springs, but a little bit different, but something you need to look into. And as, like I say, I think this is important just to let people know that there are options out there other than what, the tennis community seems to be, attracted
talking
to.
Talking about, yeah.
And like you say, just because it's been around forever.
And one thing I would say is, I would prefer him to be in an online environment. I mean, in a in-person environment, and if there were an in-person school that would adapt, that's what we would do. Yeah. But the only thing that exists that allows him to do what he's trying to do is online. And I'll say this too, if there's any public administrators out there that really want a kid to be there from 7:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. every day, no matter what, you don't want to miss out on and Everett's not going to be an Olympian or anything, but this is my point, is you don't want to miss out an Olympian in your school who doesn't feel like they can train, and so they go to an online or private option. I always think back to Katie Ledecky. She was, I think, 15 when she won her first gold medal, but stayed in a public school her entire career, and she said the public school superintendent principal were very happy to work with her. And yeah. somebody interviewed them one day and they said, well, we sure weren't going to turn away our Olympian, right? So
right.
I just think schools have to remember, I go back to, I ask them all the time, who's your customer?
Yeah.
And the reality is a lot of schools, they care a lot what the superintendent thinks and the principal thinks and the community and the school board. But the person who's they're there because of the kids. And often the kids are who they never ask their opinion. And so I would say, you know, public schools often tell you they can't do it. And I worked in a public school for 17 years, public school district for 17 years. They tell you why they can't. I would say it'd be better to pivot to, is there a way, right?
Yeah.
Because right. a kid like Katie Ledecky is going to do well on her state tests. She's also going to do well on her AP exam. And she may not be in your building ever or for an hour a day.
Right.
You have to be okay with that.
Right, right. So, yep. Yeah, exactly. So good. Well, glad we got time to catch up. You want to talk a little bit about the future of the podcast? I can tell you, you know, got a couple of good guests coming up. We've got a couple of old buddies coming back. Petros Rosokos, from Cyprus, who played at Wake Forest. He is still playing professional tennis, but he's also started a college recruiting tennis service. So that'll be interesting to hear sort of, you know, his plans for that and how it might be able to help some of our listeners out there. And we're also going to talk to TJ Pura. TJ has been on the podcast probably 25 times now.
our favorite guest.
Yeah, maybe three or four, but he's back in college tennis. He's a volunteer assistant this year at Duke. So love to hear sort of his decision to leave the world of finance and the professional office environment for his passion being on the tennis court. So looking forward to those two guys coming back in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, and a couple folks that I've asked, Chris Eubanks, I'd love to have him on now in the top 100. But then also have Matthias from Tucker on. You know, he played at Baylor and went deep into the singles national championship. So an elite player. Want to have him on so he can tell us a little bit about what they do at Tucker and then a little bit about his past also. So we've got some good guests. And if y'all have any suggestions, we'd love to hear them. But ultimately, Scott and I want to rekindle the podcast, keep it going, and find some ways to make it where we can travel and interview folks and make that work. So we hope everybody out there that's listening. I know Scott has had some folks tell him how much they like the podcast. I hope we can continue to provide some good conversations for everybody who listens.
Yeah. And if you have any comments, suggestions, DMs are always open on Twitter, Pairs Players, or if you prefer email, pairsandplayers@gmail.com.
Yep. Sounds good. Well, that wraps up episode 71. It was a quick one, just kind of a get back going. It's like that first time you get back working out after you hadn't been working out. You're going to be sore tomorrow, but we're kind of rusty, but hope you enjoyed it. We can't wait to see you next time.